Right, with that, let us move on to the third segment of our live show on day two of the NFL's free agent tampering period. Colin, we wanted to talk about winners and losers. I think I might go first, actually, because I can only think of one idea for winners in free agency, so I'm going to cheat and go first. To me, winners, it's got to be running backs, first of all, in general. You know, a lot of disgruntlement over recent years, but the unprecedentedly high salary cap has finally delivered a victory for the hard-pressed running backs of the world. I mean, again, you know, leaning on what Bill Barnwell was doing in his analysis, really good article on ESPN today. I thought he broke it down quite well. You know, if you compare the sort of deals that were being done at the peak of, you know, running back lunacy, if you like, when Adrian Peterson got that massive extension from the Vikings, and really there's been no return ever to that. You were talking about 11-12% of the salary cap going on a running back, which was clearly nuts. Barnwell was looking at some of the deals, and you know, whether it's DeAndre Swift or Saquon or any of what looked like the frothier deals at the upper end of the running back market, you're still only looking at maximum 4-4.2% of the salary cap, which is not an unhealthy amount to have tied up in that particular position relative to what you can spend on the rest of your roster. So it is like, well, the headline numbers, the nominal figures are actually quite high, and it doesn't necessarily break the bank if you think you got the right guy, but it's a win for running backs anyway, because they've at least captured a little bit more of the pie than was available to them before this season. And look, it's a brutal position, as Kieran was saying earlier. You know, guys come off a cliff fairly quickly once they hit 26-27. You count on the fingers of maybe one and a half hands the number of running backs who get their extension and actually deliver anything like the production that you would have hoped for based on what they did in the early parts of their careers. We shall see how that one pans out, but I'm going to put them down as a winner first up. Brian, I'll come to you next. Who are your winners from free agents?
Playing position or team? Or is it just...
Playing position, team, fans, mascots, wherever you want to go. The world is your clan.
I'll go with the Jags. I think Gabe Davis is a great signing. I think he was kind of lived in the shadow of Stephon Diggs over the last couple of years. I think it's a worthy contract for a player that I believe can step up to be number one to get Ridley back. Having done the piece with Kieran last week in terms of the local Jags radio station, they were calling out last week two key positions was offensive line. Well, they brought in a really strong centre, and if they get Ridley back tomorrow, I think they've put themselves in a position to have a bounce back season next year. So it's not because Kieran's on, he lives close to the area. They're a team that I thought would go out with these. It was clearly called out last week. The board here was a clear need. Gabe Davis, for me, is a big pickup.
You see that as a win as well, Kieran. I'd be interested in your take on Gabe.
Gabe to the Jags. Yeah, well, there's a couple of things in play. I mean, I don't think the deal had to be sold that well. He's a local kid. He's from Fernandina Beach. He went to school at UCF. He knows the area very well. You know, he did a lot of good stuff with the Bills. You know, sometimes players want to go home, come home, and I think he looked around. He saw, you know, Trevor Lawrence, decent quarterback. You know, Doug Peterson, you know, good head coach. I thought it makes sense for Gabe Davis, and it makes sense for the Jags. It's a great pickup. I think there was a little bit of, you know, let's do this just in case the Calvin Ridley stuff goes south. Make sure we got our behind covered, because there is a bit of a fall off with wide receivers in Jacksonville. But I think he'll do good. I mean, you know, we've all seen him in the playoffs, you know, perform, and that's where the Jags need to be. They're going to need somebody making some big plays when it's, you know, January, possibly even February. For me, well, talking about winners, you know, it pains me to say this, but Saquon, for me, is the big winner out of this. I mean, he did everything and said everything that Giants fans wanted to hear up until yesterday. And, you know, for him, I mean, he's got the move where he's going to be, you know, given every opportunity to shine. I mean, it was a comparison of the O-line with the Giants last year to the Eagles O-line last year, and it's 1-31, you know, in ranking. So, I mean, he's going to get every chance to excel. I'm not as bitter as a lot of other Giants fans are. I was resigned to losing him. You know, nobody had the Eagles on the bingo card, but I think Saquon with the deal that he got, which is not really that far from what the Giants were probably going to do, if it all came down to it. But you know, he got paid. He got to go to a contender, a real big contender, and the Giants won out of that too, because you know they were never they weren't bringing him back. That's not the direction they're going. So, you know, it's as much as it pains me to say, good for Saquon.
I saw that O-line comparison as well, by the way, Kieran. I thought it was striking. And I think off the top of my head, the expected yards per rush for a Giants back last year was something like 3.5 versus 4.7 for the Eagles. Like, you're literally getting, you know, 25% more yardage per carry based on how good that O-line was. O-line, of course, which won't have Jason Kelce next year, which will be a significant factor. And we'll see how the tush push goes probably the most important part of the whole process.
It'll give Saquon a chance to compete in the big games. One playoff season in all the time he was there. In 22, when the Giants get playoffs, he was him. You know, I mean, starting with the Titans game in week one, you know, when they went for the extra point and he got it in. So, you know, kudos to Saquon. I'm not going to be a hater. I won't be burning his jersey even if I had it. I think I was saying to Brian or somebody else earlier on, he'll be injured for the first meeting, and the second meeting is probably going to be in the third week of December, and he's going to be benched because the Eagles will be, you know, 11-3 or, you know, 12-3 or something like that. So I'm not overly worried about it. I wish him well, but I don't wish him well against the Giants.
Brian, before we go to Colm's first winner, you got some breaking news for us.
Yeah, it's one for you. I thought this is an interesting one. So Jonathan Owens, who moved over to the Packers last year, having played a number of years with the Texans, has signed a 2-year deal with the Bears. So he'll be head over heels. I think he's one of those guys that likes to do the head over heels celebration, which we saw with the Packers last year, but he's moved over, defensive back, 2-year deal, according to his agent. One really stellar season with the Packers, according to all the numbers being quoted by the various different outlets of NFL media in particular. And they're suggesting the Bears are going to be very pleased to take a player out of the division. And I suppose addition by subtraction.
I have plenty of my doubts as regular viewers and listeners will know about Matt Eberflus. One thing Matt Eberflus knows, though, is defensive backs. The Bears have generally drafted well when it comes to the secondary, and they've made some good pickups there. So I'd be kind of cautiously optimistic that one will pan out, and so much the better if you get to wipe the eye of a divisional rival while you go about your business. Colm, give us your first winner, please.
Well, I'm going to be greedy, and I'm going to go for two here, because to me, the positional group, mentioned it last night, but got to talk about guards. The fact that the jump in salary is quite something. And when you have David Tepper handing out contracts, it's altering things for everyone. Now, the Rams probably set this ball in motion, but I think Howie got wind of it and got the Dickerson deal done, which at the time was like, wow, that's a lot. I mean, he's a good player, but that seems a lot. 4 hours later, it was like, oh yeah, that makes all sorts of sense, because Landon Dickerson was going to look at that and say, hang on, those guys are getting $20 million a year. Whoa, 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 what am I worth? For me, players getting big money is always a good thing. These are guys who put their bodies on the line day in, day out.
Colm, and I know you discussed that one last night as well, and it was a really interesting conversation, but you often talk about the response and then the response to the response. Like, this is, and you got guys like Micah Parsons and you got guys like Myles Garrett in the league, when you got pass rushers who can be moved around anywhere by clever defensive coordinators, could come from anywhere, could hurt you in multiple ways, you need guys on the interior as well. It's not all about the tackles.
Yeah, no, that's exactly it, Connor. That's where I think you're seeing a change, right? Look at earlier this year when he was fully healthy, the fact that Myles Garrett was lining up front of the center and was doing crossovers as he toyed with their minds. And that's what they do now. It used to be you lined up your best pass rusher against the left tackle. I mean, I think, you know, when we look back on the history of football and you see where defenses, you know, how defenses played the game up until probably, you know, within the last 10 years, it was after the Legion of Boom were the last kind of defense that said, right, that's it. you play on our terms. Ever since then, it's changed a little bit. So you can no longer just have a left tackle and a bunch of guys, and there'll be a response to that too. And we'll see how it'll go, and that'll be interesting. The one team I would mention, who I think it's way too early, but and you're not going to appreciate this, Connor, but I like what the Green Bay Packers have done. They have a plan. They know how they're going about their business. They wanted to get younger at the running back position. If you look at the contract they gave to Jacobs, it was very similar to the last contract they gave Aaron Jones. I think bringing in McKinney is a good signing. I think they know what they're about, and they are the team that probably is less influenced by outside noise than almost anyone else in the league. So I would have to say I've been impressed by the Packers thus far.
And you've kind of neatly anticipated my loser, which is the other side of that picture, which is rest of the NFC North. I think you're absolutely right. Like, the Packers, I've grown to fear them for many different reasons over the years, obviously. But, you know, this version of that team is truly frightening to me, because they're so young, because they seem to have so much upside, because of what they did in the playoffs. They should have knocked off the Niners. They should have gone to the championship game, and that would have been really interesting to see them go up against the Lions. I don't know how much more Detroit can squeeze out of what they have. And, you know, they've lost their offensive coordinator, obviously, who was a key part of that whole picture. We don't know where the Vikings are going to be. And, you know, even if a very best case scenario for the Bears is that you get Caleb Williams or whoever in and you have a CJ Stroud-like season, but, like, how often does that happen? Realistically, I think everybody in the NFC North is going to be looking up at the Packers. They've made really good moves in free agency so far. They're well set up. We know whatever receivers that Brian Gutekunst and Matt LaFleur are looking at are probably the best receivers in the draft below the first round. They seem to have been able to unearth these gems all over the place. I'd love to crack the Green Bay Packers safe code and get a look at who they're actually scouting and who's on their wide receiver board, because, you know, time and time again, they've winkled these guys out who've been and to be fair, and we talk about it all the time, it's not just who you draft and it's not just who you bring in, it's how you develop them. Like, that's probably the secret sauce for the Packers. Like, they're getting the very most out of what they have, and that's really as much as I can do to talk about Green Bay right now and the rest of the...
You better watch Xavier McKinney with the snowmobiles on bye week up there when the snow goes. He's got a propensity to do some wild things on the bye week, so.
Brian, you're a loser.
I don't know if it's a loser, but it's a question mark. The Cowboys, I know I suggested last night Cowboys fans will, and probably the organization feel they're not far off being a team that can potentially be in the Super Bowl, and that's why last year they went out and made two trades in Cooks and Gilmore, and they've done very little so far over the course of the last 24 hours, and I know it's March, I know it's way too early, but it struck me today as a bit of a surprise that they didn't go in for Aaron Jones in particular. Having lost Zeke last year, Tony Pollard is gone. They didn't really have the strongest running game last year. They could have relied on a number of different players. I thought Aaron Jones was a good fit. He's from that local area. He always seems to play well when he goes into Dallas, and he obviously had a great college career down in Texas and stuff. So I thought that was a nice pickup for the Vikings today. In fairness, that was one of the ones that came out early today, that he'd gone and done that deal. And they've done nothing since, again, the Cowboys. So it's a bit of a surprise for me. I'd say the loser, and you might not like this, Hunter, it's a one player in particular, and it's probably Justin Fields, because last week there was various different conversations that there's a second round on the table, there's a third round, maybe a two and a four, all the various different permutations. But what we've seen over the course of the last 24 hours, a lot of teams who need a backup are going and getting a backup. And where does that leave Fields? Because I felt Fields would look at the situation, and despite him clearly wanting to stay in Chicago and all the right things being said by Ryan Poles, I think it'll be both parties probably felt he would go and get a place where he could be a starting quarterback somewhere else. And right now, I don't see that being going to materialise unless we see, as you said last night, a potential injury come training camp, which is always very likely. So the value is probably gone now, it strikes me now as more of a draft, a second day trade or third day trade come late April in the draft.
Kieran, who's your loser?
Well, as a couple, I just had a quick look at the free agents that are still available. Danielle Hunter still out there, Tyron Smith, Stephon Gilmore.
I think did Smith end up going to the Chiefs? He was one I was kind of keeping an eye on myself.
That was a tight end. That's Irving Smith, tight end from the Ravens. Yeah. Hunter is actually talking to the Colts right now, according to Ian Rappaport.
Yeah,
interesting.
And not to beat a dead horse, but Bryce Young didn't. I mean, he got the O line help, but who's he going to throw the ball to? You know, what's going on in Carolina? I fear for him. Again, I was up close and personal with him in the press conference. He was absolutely rock bottom, absolutely despondent, disconsolate. I fear for him in the league. I just don't. Unless he bulks up like crazy the offseason, but it's not looking good for him. And the Panthers in general, despite all these, you know, the B-gap guys got the big bucks, but they're going to need a lot more than that in Carolina to do anything with poor Mr. Young. So. And it's notable. The Saints haven't done anything in free agency. Neither does Seattle. No one's talking about that. They've been very quiet.
Detroit too. Detroit's another one. Very quiet. Colm, have you got a loser for us? And please don't say it's wherever Drew Lock ended up.
I do, and maybe this is going to be a little bit controversial. For me, it is the Atlanta Falcons. I think it's a massive overpay on Kirk Cousins. I think Kirk is fine, but I've said this on the show previously. I think the league will change utterly in 10 years. I think the idea of paying for average QB play is going to die out completely. Because what is your absolute best case scenario with Kirk Cousins? That you go to the wild card? Giddy up. No, sign me up for that for $45 million a year. Oh, I can't wait. Absolutely fantastic. Oh, I'll take all of that. Like, the reason the 49ers were able to do what they did with Brock Purdy is A, Kyle Shanahan's a genius, B, the best weapons in the league, and C, they were paying him with magic beans. Like, the Falcons are paying cash money to Kirk Cousins.
And as you say, Colm, and the best you can hope for with that, when pretty much everything else goes your way, is second place, because you still have to find a way past Patrick Mahomes.
Yeah. I just think that the Falcons were very close to the playoffs last year. If they had adequate QB play, they probably would have made it. And now they've paid $45 million to have adequate QB play. This is the problem. Owners get super impatient, and instead of, you know, they were in a really good position to go up and, you know, make a move potentially to get a QB. But this has been going on. Like, we talked about David Tepper. You know, it's the same, a little bit of the same situation. Like, they took a huge cap hit on Matty Ryan a few years ago. They then decided to roll the dice with Arthur Smith. And then Arthur Blank kind of got unhappy, and Raheem Morris said it. I wouldn't be here if we had better QB play. It's a hell of a premium to pay for better QB play. I think the Vikings ultimately made the right decision in the long term for them, because what's the off ramp, right? With Kirk Cousins there, the Falcons, and realistically, it's a 2-year deal, right? And then it's a kind of it's up to the team, but like, you're probably likely to win 8-9 games with Kirk Cousins, right? And what's your off ramp? Like, at what point do they have the ammunition to go up? Where's your succession plan? And the Vikings, with Kirk being injured, this is probably the best position they're in to go up and get or stay pat and take a young QB. But ultimately, to me, I think the league in 10 years is going to be the case of, you're going to pay the guys who give you a legitimate chance to absolutely be there. That is your Patrick Mahomes. That is your Josh Allen's. But I think it'll be much more of a carousel after that. The teams are not going to want to pay a premium for guys who can, you know, Kirk Cousins is fine, but he's not a top 10 QB. He's probably somewhere in the region of the 14th best QB in the league. And I think paying the 14th best QB top kind of 10 money is silly.
Connor, Colin mentions top 10. Over the course of the last week, in particular since the Combine, it's been suggested that JJ McCarthy will go in the top 10. I know we're going to be covering the draft in the lead-up in April, but like for me, JJ McCarthy looks like an idea for 11, 12, 13, which is a running order of the Vikings, the Broncos, and the Raiders potentially. I would love to see what the Vikings would do if Kirk Cousins had a say, because I'm convinced the strategy would have been still to go and get a quarterback. We'll never know now, and it probably pushes the buttons a little bit more for them to go and get that quarterback and try even move up a couple of slots to find that quarterback that they want for the future. But I don't think we're going to get away from them taking a quarterback, whether Kirk Cousins remain in situ or not. I think that was probably very evident that would be the plan. But we'll never know now, but it probably heightens the pressure on them to try find this quarterback. Or, as we said earlier on the show, they run with Sam Darnold for 1 year and see how that plays out.
Yeah, indeed. And look, all of that really tees up nicely the upcoming draft, of course, before that. And it's been great to be back with you live, chopping up the free agency frenzy over the last couple of days. We have our live show, a live event coming up in Buskers on the Ball in Temple Bar with Peter King on the 28th of March. Again, it's sold out, but we're really looking forward to welcoming you all to seeing you in real life and to getting Peter's take as he commences what you might call his retirement tour. And you know, and it's, you know, we feel very privileged to be able to welcome Peter and to help celebrate that milestone with him. You know, such a fantastic contributor to the world of NFL coverage over the years. And Colin, we mentioned that the Football Morning in America column, which was required reading. So any chance he'd just keep it going, just keep the column going, just give us something from week to week, because and must ask him when we actually get him in the room, how long it actually took to write that. I think he was up till 4 o'clock in the morning most weekends, his time churning that thing out, and just absolute quality every single week. So we can't wait for that. Can't wait to see you all in person. Plenty more content coming your way between now and then, though, on the Irish NFL show. Keep an eye out for all those interviews and podcasts, which will be dropping between now and then.